ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Is Brian Kemp going for the jugular?
The RGA is going to defend Brian Kemp and our incumbents because they're great governors.
Welcome to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the podcast we want you to depend on for the most on-the-ground coverage of the 2022 election. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, along with your other host, Patricia Murphy, and we are two of the political insiders here at the AJC. If you haven't already, please follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up later, how Georgia Democrats are unifying as the GOP dukes it out, and why some Democrats are crossing over to vote in the Republican primary. But first, Brian Kemp is really pulling out all the stops to defeat former Senator David Perdue in the closing days of the May 24th primary. I asked the governor what it means to have the support of former Vice President Mike Pence. Here's what he said.
It's incredible. And we got three great governors that are coming and many others that are supporting us from afar. We got the vice president coming in. You know, Speaker Ralston endorsed me this week. We've got an event with President Bush that's helping us raise money because, look, we are fighting the whole country in this governor's race right here. Doug Ducey knows that. All these other people know that.
Governor Kemp also says that the surge of Republican turnout, its record turnout so far in the early voting process, is a sign of enthusiasm.
I think it's great. I think people are fired up. They're mad at Biden inflation. They're mad, as the governor talked about, with the crisis at the border, and they're ready to push back. And I think it's going to be a great cycle for us. We just got to keep the momentum. It's a long way to November.
Patricia, these final days right before next week's, it sounds weird saying that, but next week's primary is really sort of a tour de force for Governor Kemp. He is not letting up whatsoever on David Perdue. Between the visits from Chris Christie and Doug Ducey and Mike Pence coming up next week, to this major economic development announcement, the Hyundai plant that he's going to go down to coastal Georgia next week and announce, all that put together, he's trying to show no quarter, to give no recourse whatsoever for David Perdue to fight back.
Yeah, and it's amazing because it feels like a general election with the amount of resources and attention and energy the Kemp campaign is dumping into this moment. And knowing it's a primary, it feels like it's a neck and neck primary. I think we have seen from polling, from anecdotal evidence on the ground, from endorsements, et cetera, it doesn't feel like a neck and neck primary right now between David Perdue and Brian Kemp, but just the amount of effort, time, money, events, TV ads, endorsements, advocates, everybody who's anybody who has anything to do with Republican politics in the state has really gotten into this race. And I've been amazed that they've gotten into it for Brian Kemp in such a kind of a an uneven way. You wouldn't know that there is a former president who has come out against Brian Kemp based on all of the Republicans who have gotten into this race and gotten involved in this race on Brian Kemp's behalf and against President Trump's pick of David Perdue. I think it speaks to the fact that Kemp is up in the polls. I think there are maybe some Republicans who would be sitting on the sidelines and saying, well, I'm going to support whoever wins. I think it speaks to the relative strength that everybody in the state sees of Kemp, but it also speaks to just the inherent strengths of this Kemp campaign. So it's he is not letting up, though. I totally agree. He's got this crazy schedule coming up, just more than a dozen events over the next several days. That is not the same case over on the Perdue side. And I think this is going to start to really show itself up in the results as well.
And we'll talk about that in a second. But to your point about crazy schedule, I am here in some park in Forsyth County in between two campaign stops. You're on your way to go see David Perdue. I just saw Governor Kemp with Governor Christie, and I'm going to go see Gary Black. We are also having these crazy schedules because this is the moment where it's a lot of fun to be a political reporter too, because all that work that we've been covering, all the dynamics of the campaign, they're really coming into a sort of sharper relief right now. And our readers, listeners, viewers, everyone out there is tuning in even more so about what's happening. And, you know, one of the trends you talked about was all this sort of a final rush of support for Governor Kemp. And I wrote about this sort of establishment revenge right now, where all these Trump opponents, Trump enemies, people who are Trump skeptics, they're all coming off the sidelines and backing Governor Kemp because they see this potentially as a way to punish the former president. Brian Robinson, the famed Republican strategist, had this great quote, which was, I'm paraphrasing, but when you're headed to Victory Island, a lot of folks wash up on the shore. And that's what's happening, is that a lot of people, you know, it's no longer seen as a big gamble to go to back the incumbent governor. A lot of Republicans were staying on the sidelines early on. Well, now they're not. As you wrote, almost the entire legislative body, almost every Republican in the Georgia legislature is backing Brian Kemp. And we're seeing activists and others at this point, I mean, grassroots folks, national figures, at this point, this raises the expectation so high for Governor Kemp, though, that even if he finishes at 49.9% of the vote, it'll be a defeat, essentially. It'll be looked at as a holy crap moment. He was, you know, he's at 60% in some polls right now. If he finishes at 49.9 and is forced into runoff, David Perdue has all the momentum instantly. So this is a high-stakes situation for the governor.
Oh, yeah. Well, expectations are such a double-edged sword. You know, expectations can bring people over to your side in terms of endorsements, in terms of surrogates, but it can also leave some voters at home if they feel like you don't need their vote. And so Brian Kemp is sending that message by getting around the state, pulling out his surrogates, and really getting in front of as many voters as possible to tell them, like, we need you to vote. This is not a done deal. You're so right. If he doesn't avoid a runoff, that's going to be a huge news day. That would be a huge news event. It would be seen as victory by Donald Trump's campaign and Donald Trump's people. And, it would be a little bit like when Bill Clinton did not win the New Hampshire primary, but declared himself the comeback kid because everybody thought he would do so much worse than he did. The expectations can really cut both ways. And so that's why the Kemp campaign, I really do think, is spending so many resources to leave nothing to chance, basically.
And another reason is Governor Kemp's been there before. He was the number two finisher in the runoff in 2018. It was then Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle who was going for the knockout blow. He just couldn't get, he was in the mid 40s. He never in the polls could get above 50% and ended up closer to 40. In the first round of voting. And it was Governor Kemp who was the one who benefited from that late surge, who benefited from Trump's endorsement back then during the runoff phase. So Governor Kemp is now the one saying he doesn't want to leave anything to chance. And to give our loyal listeners a peek behind the curtain, we don't write election stories the night of the election. It's too busy. It's too crazy, right? We're in the middle. There's a lot of things happening. So what we often do is we write prep stories. And so earlier today, actually, before one of the governor's campaign stops, I sat there for 2 or 3 hours and wrote up all the different prep stories for what could happen next week. So the governor wins, David Perdue wins, headed toward a runoff. And it was kind of very interesting writing all the potential, you know, leads and analysis paragraphs about like all those different outcomes. And of course, two of those three I'll have to throw away. I still have my Hillary Clinton wins prep somewhere in my mailbox. So
at least you didn't hit the button on that one by accident.
Yeah. A lot of journalists learned that night too, to make sure you have your prep for all eventualities, because a lot of people weren't thinking Trump would win. So we're ready in any eventuality, but right now, Governor Kemp doesn't want to leave anything to chance. And we're seeing as well, David Perdue is not giving the signals that you'd expect a candidate who thinks he's in a race, you know, he's in a close race to give. I mean, he has had very few events. He had a very limited schedule over the weekend with, as far as we can tell, one stop at the Chatham County GOP down near where he lives on the coast of Georgia. Very limited social media presence the last few days. Very limited campaign events, just a handful of gatherings this week, mostly county GOP meetings at night. So not the same packed schedule. His campaign would push back, saying it's still working to finalize some other events, that he's still doing a lot of media interviews. And of course, they've been pushing the line that early voting numbers suggest that he could be in stronger contention than the polls do. They keep on pointing to the fact that a lot of new Republican voters are casting ballots, a lot of Republicans who skipped the 2018 midterm, a lot of Republicans who only vote in races where Donald Trump is on the ballot. So all that could be a good sign for David Perdue, but it could mean nothing. We just don't know. It's really hard to look into these numbers, Patricia.
Yeah, and especially because Georgians don't register by party, we really don't know who's voting in this election other than how they voted in the past. And Georgia voters have all sorts of reasons for voting in different primaries. It has a lot to do with where the competitive races are, and it has a lot to do with whether they think their vote is going to count. So it's not really predictive of November, and it's not even predictive of the end result, especially right now because of the many changes in early voting and how strange early voting was in 2020. I don't know. It seems like there's also a good chance that people could just be getting early voting taken care of because absentee voting, vote by mail, has been a little bit up in the air in terms of when people's deadlines are. And so we just don't know the reasons behind some of this activity. And in Georgia politics, especially, people always ask us to predict what's going to happen, like every day, what's going to happen, we think is going to happen. And we literally don't know. We do not know. There is a scenario where David Perdue pushes this to a runoff. There's a scenario for just about anything in politics. And so we have to wait till the results come in. And that's the reason we write those. We write many stories. And it's the reason why most candidates actually write 3 speeches for election night as well, because we just don't know exactly how it's going to go until the story is written.
I still remember the 2021 runoff where we were expecting David Perdue to have some sort of speech that night and then ended up just telling everyone his aides had to go down to the hotel and say, everyone go home, there's going to be nothing.
He gives no speech at all. That was pretty consistent with how that campaign was going anyway. You were like, oh, that seems just about right. We didn't see a whole lot of him before election night, and we saw none of him on election night. and I've been surprised at the light schedule that Perdue's been keeping. To have one public event, that is your schedule for a year away from the primary, not the weekend before the primary. We don't know what to make of that, but if you are another Republican, if you're a Perdue supporter, you'd like to see a little more get up and go there. It's important to do press, but it's important to do all of the things ahead of primary day this close to it.
You're exactly right. And part of this trend that we're closely watching is something that we wrote about in the Jolt a few days ago, which was this significant proportion of Democratic primary voters, reliable Democratic primary voters, who voted in the Democratic primary just 2 years ago, who have flipped over and voted in the GOP primary. About 7 to 8% of the number of voters in the Republican primary voted Democratic just 2 years ago. So not an enormous number, but a significant number. Just like we said, it's really hard to read into the GOP numbers. It's hard to guess who these folks are supporting. Some of them we've talked to tell us that they're supporting Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger because they want to vote against whoever Trump has endorsed. But others, they're trying to play it strategically and saying that they're voting for the Republicans they feel will be more vulnerable to Stacey Abrams. And some of them are saying that would be David Perdue. So there's a lot of gamesmanship. We have no idea if it will actually have any impact on next week's results because we don't have next week's results. But Patricia, it's certainly been a unique trend in Georgia to watch, in part because there's no real marquee race. There's important races on the Democratic ballot, but Stacey Abrams has no opponent and Raphael Warnock has only a little known competitor. So there's less of a major reason for that some Democrats feel like they need to vote.
Yeah, if you're a Democratic voter, let's say in Atlanta's 5th congressional district, Nakima Williams is running unopposed for the House seat. Stacey Abrams is running unopposed. Raphael Warnock may as well be unopposed. He has just very nominal competition. And there are these huge races playing across the aisle, and I reached out to and interviewed about a dozen Democratic voters who voted in the Republican primary and asked them why. I didn't find anybody who said, oh, I'm looking for the weakest candidate. I mean, they were all genuinely alarmed by Jody Heiss and alarmed by David Perdue. And they were all very anti-Trump. And so it was the Trump factor driving their decision to get involved in this. And they didn't all vote the same way. Some of them voted only for Raffensperger and left the rest blank. Some of them voted only for Kemp and left the rest blank. But they were all motivated by Trump and said, you know, I feel like Trump and the people he is choosing are dangerous for democracy, not dangerous for Democrats in November, just dangerous for democracy. And in a swing state, there's always the chance that either party could win. And in an off-year election, in a year that's not shaping up to be really, really great for Democrats nationally, many of these Democrats said, I know it's entirely possible the Republican could win in November, and I don't want that Republican to be David Perdue or Jody Heiss. Now, I did not talk to all 16,000 Democratic voters who switched over, so that is not, that is only a tiny sample, but it was really consistent, and I was really interested in that. All but one said they were going to vote straight Democratic ticket in November, but one woman said, you know, I think that Kemp and Raffensperger stood up to Trump, and that's about all you can ask from, you know, from somebody, so... That was those are the results of my interviews so far.
Well, you know, on the same topic, before we take a break, on the same topic, you know, we here at the Politically Georgia podcast bring you breaking news all the time. And I'm on the campaign trail. Patricia, you're driving, or you're
hands free.
You're in transit.
I'm driving.
Okay, I don't want to get driving. In trouble. You're driving to an event. But we just have this fresh.
Is that bad?
Hands free. She's hands free. She's not violating any traffic laws. But we have a breaking development in from a David Perdue supporter named Debbie Dooley, who texts frequently.
Uh-oh.
And as we're talking, she writes, David Perdue is all over the place working. I saw him last night. Talked to folks he was with today. He just isn't publicizing the events he's speaking at. He's doing it old-fashioned way. He will force Kemp in a runoff. Into a runoff, I think she meant. So we're hearing pushback from the fact that he's not doing a lot of public events. You know, again,
well, if he's not telling people, then they are technically not public events. So, I don't understand the secrecy, but it's important feedback. Important feedback.
Important feedback. We understand it. We hear it. And look, me and you, we get texts all the time from Perdue allies just like this, saying the numbers are moving his way, but. Again, we're also hearing the same pushback from not just Kemp's allies, but like independent folks, people with no skin in the game who are polling this, you know, either because they're interested in different trends that are going on or anything. And all the tracking polls we've heard from independent folks and, of course, from Kemp's folks show he's hovering around the 60s and that he is in just fine shape. But certainly if he does get forced to run off, there will be no narrative that he let his foot off the gas, because he has not done that at all. This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Hip-hop is a product of Black people. It's a product of Black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
And we're back to the Politically Georgia podcast from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, along with your other host, Patricia Murphy. And we are two of the very enthusiastic, energetic, and not tired at all hosts of the Morning Insider, The Jolt, which you can get in your inbox every morning. Patricia works on it every night late. No, I work on it every night late. Patricia works on it every morning very early. See how not tired we are? And I imagine we're going to have a lot of campaign trail fodder in the latest Jolt. Also, some analysis of the Tuesday night primaries all over the nation, but particularly in Pennsylvania. and some of how that translates here in Georgia. So we'll see a lot of that. And of course, some fresh details from all the various stops that we have been making. We think the Morning Jolt newsletter sets the stakes and the agenda in Georgia politics, and you can get it in your inbox every morning if you're a subscriber to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You can join us and support our work and join our community right now, this very moment, by going to subscribe.ajc.com/podcasts, and your first month of unlimited digital access is just 99 cents. I can't believe it. That's subscribe.ajc.com/podcasts. So you always know what's really going on. And Patricia, one of the things that's going on right now is that Democratic runway is about to run short. Democrats have enjoyed a lot of this Republican infighting, all this sparring. If what we think happens Tuesday happens and Herschel Walker wins without a runoff and Brian Kemp wins without a runoff, then the full frontal attacks from Republicans, the undivided attention from Republicans, will soon shift over to Raphael Warnock and to Stacey Abrams in their races for Senate and governor. And that really changes the ballgame.
Yeah, it really does. And we know that Republicans have been itching to run against Stacey Abrams. They would have loved to have had this conversation start about 6 months ago, but it is what it is. And I think that Republicans and Republican voters tend to be very good at resetting themselves once they head into a general election. So any anger or frustration, I really do feel like, is going to fall away once they are focusing on Abrams and the idea of a Governor Abrams. And I think that she's always been a real unifying force for Republicans. I got a mailer in my mailbox today from, it's an anti-Burt Jones mailer, and it is calling Burt Jones, who's a very conservative Republican running for lieutenant governor. It's a picture with him and Stacey Abrams, which is completely photoshopped. It's not a real picture, but it's the two of them calling Burt Jones Stacey Abrams BFF. And for the campaign trying to defeat Burt Jones, they feel like Stacey Abrams is the most effective attack they could use on Jones or any Republican, even if it's not accurate. Just having her picture and her name on a mailer, they feel like is strong enough to activate Republican votes. And they're probably not wrong.
Which is so funny because we saw Doug Collins, who was friends with Stacey Abrams. I mean, you know, state lawmakers, they folks cross party aisles and they befriend Republicans, befriend Democrats, and they work together sometimes to make legislation better. And Doug Collins, back when he was a state House member, was very close with Stacey Abrams when she was the House Minority Leader, when she was the top Democrat in the Georgia House. They had pictures together and they embraced in a few pictures. They were so close that Stacey Abrams even made Doug Collins a character in one of her books. He was kind of a nerdy, kind of somewhat annoying character in one of her romance novels, but like endearingly annoying, not like annoyingly annoying. So if that makes any sense.
Of course.
But then to see this kind of hacky mailer, because I saw it on your Twitter feed, you know, with like a, not even a, you know, that didn't even look like it was, they even tried to Photoshop it. It was just this kind of pasted image. Just shows you how desperate, this was an outside group. It wasn't a campaign, right? But it shows you how desperate folks get at this point in the race.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is what happens when we're this far away from a primary. And so I think when people are getting mailers in their at their homes, it is super important to consider the source. Look who paid for that. Same with ads, especially on Facebook, anything on social media, Instagram. You really need to consider the source of these attacks that you're seeing on candidates, because they are only tangentially accurate in some cases, and in some cases, totally inaccurate.
I like the tangentially accurate as a nice way of saying not true.
Yeah.
So I had the chance to sit down with Stacey Abrams the other day and asked her if she's seeing any more energy in the party since the leak of the infamous leak of the Supreme Court opinion on Roe v. Wade.
Absolutely. And it's coming from every corner. We know that for many years, the specter has been out there, but it has never seemed real and imminent. And what that leak proved is that this is not just a talking point for elections. It is a reality. And there are, you know, thousands of Georgia women who are confronting that reality. And so are men in the state. So are families. This matters. And the fact that Republicans are now chattering about whether they're going to criminalize women, whether they're going to put doctors in jail, whether they are going to fully and completely ban abortions with no exceptions. Those are real conversations, and we can no longer pretend that it's hyperbole. It is absolutely possible because we're watching it happen across this country, and we've watched it happen in the state.
Now, these comments came shortly after she spoke at the Democratic State Party's big annual fundraiser, where the agenda, the top of the menu, if you could say that, was unity. There was a clear contrast between the Republican infighting over Trump and between Perdue and Kemp with the Democratic field, which, of course, there's still a lot of warring down the ticket, rivalries down the ticket for offices like the Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General and Secretary of State. But the top of the ticket is unified. And Congresswoman Nikema Williams, who's the chairwoman of the state party, she talked about that sort of trend going on as the divide with Republicans is just deepening.
We're letting them hash out their family business while we're continuing to do the work of the people of Georgia.
Patricia, I thought that event a couple nights ago where it attracted about 1,000 people, it was a sold out event. The main speaker was Senator Amy Klobuchar, but she didn't even really need to be the main speaker because the main speaker is the keynotes, in effect, were Raphael Warnock, John Ossoff, and Stacey Abrams. Those were the crowd pleasers at that event. And I just felt like it really did underscore the fact that Republicans are divided and they're going to continue to be divided no matter what. Doesn't mean they can't win. Doesn't mean they're not. And many people would favor them going into this November election. But Trump will still be a specter. Democrats don't have to worry about that. They've got their own issues, plenty of them. But, Democrats are united up and down the party aisle behind Raphael Warnock and Stacey Abrams at this moment.
Yeah, Democrats definitely have that going for them. I think that is the benefit of being an ascendant party, a party with a very clear leader in Stacey Abrams. There is no there's no power struggle happening there at the top. And some of these other candidates, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff is not a candidate. He's a senator now. But these people really are heroes within the party because of all that they were able to do in 2020. And so they are just this. I feel like this might be like the apex of the mood of Democrats right now. Of course, if they manage to win in 2022.
Nowhere to go but
yeah,
down.
Exactly. In 2022, if they win, they're going to have to really wrestle with having to make some tough decisions. But right now, they have a single goal. They have a single leader. That is exactly the place you want to go, frankly, when you're any organization. One thing Democrats are going to have going against them is the national mood of the country. And if they can rise above that, if they can localize this race, or if they can capitalize on the anti-Trump sentiment out there, that'll be really important. But right now, President Biden, who, of course, won Georgia, is way underwater in Georgia nationally. The kind of the national trends are really tough. Inflation is so real. People's paychecks, even if they're getting bigger, they're buying less. And it is a time when you're reading more and more about stocks that are down, bonds that are down, portfolios are down, retirement accounts are down. Even this morning, I was reading about most recent Fed chairman saying that a recession is likely. Those are all headwinds for any governing party. And so Republicans, while they're going to need that unity, because they're going to need a unified message to take into those November elections to rise above and beyond what's happening in Washington and at the national level.
I couldn't have said it better myself. You nailed it. Democrats have plenty of issues ahead, and they're going to have to outperform Joe Biden, which will not be easy. Well, Patricia, that is about all the time we have on our show this week, but we're going to be with you later on this week for a Friday episode where we recap all the latest news in Georgia politics. And of course, if any news breaks, you can expect a special episode of the Politically Georgia podcast. Again, new episodes come out every Wednesday, Friday, or whenever news breaks. So we will see you then on Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing.
Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.